Good evening, councillors, and good evening, staff, and good evening to our community members in the gallery. Today, being 5:30, I'll declare council meeting number 22 open. Just a reminder, of course, that all persons in attendance are advised that it is council policy to record council meetings. The audio recording of this meeting will be made available to the public on council's website for a period of 12 months. In accordance with council policy, I'll now ask the general manager to confirm that the audio recording has commenced. Yeah. And confirmed. I'd like at this stage to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land and pay respect to them and their customs and to their elders past, present and future. In attendance, we have myself, Councillor Wass, Deputy Mayor, Councillor Reid, Councillor Atkinson, Councillor Berry, Councillor Fox, Councillor Chatterton, Councillor Percy, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Grace and Councillor Winter. Staff, we have our General Manager, Mr Arnold, our Deputy General Manager, Mr Ferrier, our Acting Manager, Development Services, Mrs Stevenson, our Manager, Community Services, Ms Jenny, our NRM Project Officer, Ms Reichardt, our Media and Communications Officer, Ms Wilcox. We've also got Ms Hughes, our Executive Manager. That'll do, thank you. That's a bit too small to read. Our Executive Assistant, Mrs Morton. And have I missed anyone? I haven't, good. That's testimony, wasn't it? Apologies. Well, we're all here, all present, so no apologies. First item, councillors, on page 2 is the confirmation of minutes of council meeting number 21 held on the 24th of October 2016. I have a mover in Councillor Fox and Councillor Berry. I'll put the recommendation that the minutes of council meeting 21 held on the 24th of October 2016 be confirmed as moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Berry. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. Workshops. Since the last council meeting, there was one on the 31st of October regarding biodiversity and one on the 7th of November from the Trail Riders Action Club, Cricket Tasmania and Walking Tracks. Declarations of interest. Councillors, I remind you that if there's any declarations of interest, now is the time to give me those declarations of interest. I have one from Councillor Grace. Councillor Grace?
Mr Mayor, on page 80. Page 50 of the agenda, page 50. DA 20163698, the development application, Channel Heritage. I'll leave the room.
Thank you. Right. Yep, thank you. And Councillor Fox?
I would also declare an interest in DA 20163698 as the appointed member to the Channel Heritage Museum Committee. But I will be staying in the room. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. So I have those two declarations. Questions on notice from the public. At the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. Questions without notice from the public. Are there any questions without notice? If you'd like to just stand, give your name and address, sir, and ask the question. And it's not on tonight's agenda? No?
No,
thank you.
Mark McBride from Judd's Creek. And I'd like to thank Mayor Wass, Deputy Reid and all the councillors for this opportunity just to represent the Huon a bit. Now, my problem is with the Huon is that it's no longer Huon Destinations anymore. It's now it's Destination Southern Tasmania, isn't it?
That's correct.
So this old map now essentially is obsolete. All right. Now, the faults with the map that I wish to draw your point to, is that where you've got the big purple dot representing the key there on the map, that is where, in fact, our nearest lake should be put. Because that's where it is. Where that big purple dot is on the map is, in fact, Hobart's closest lake, Kingborough's closest lake, and Huonville's closest lake. And as last week, we tried to get tourism off the ground. We're thinking of initiatives to get it off. I think you should put your closest lake on your map and actually, you know, do it justice. It's Lake Skinner. And if nobody's ever, if you all haven't been there, it's a kilometre-long lake at 1 kilometre of altitude. It's like having a lake at the top of Mount Wellington. I can't stress how beautiful it is and what an iconic walk it is. It's drive out to Jubbery and then drive out to the lake car park, and that's about 40 minutes on a slow road. From there on, it's a two-hour bash up this hill, which has now gained World Heritage listing, and we've spent probably $50,000 on the first 2 kilometres of it. It's an iconic lake, guys. Now, as Kingborough looks to move in on the Huon, and you've already done it with tourism, it's essential that Kingborough provides an accurate map and an initiative or an encouragement for every single school child in this district to actually go to their nearest lake. And I just wanted to draw your attention to it. What a great opportunity we are not taking. And Huonville didn't have it in them to go with it. Huonville just wasn't into tourism. But I'm backing you guys are. And I can see from it last week that you are interested in tourism. And this is a freebie. This is a gift to all you guys. My point two about this map...
And really, I need your question, and then I can answer that first bit for you, Mr. McBride.
Mayor Walsh, I just hope that between this group of us, we can firstly put Lake Skinner on the map on the next edition. That's all I ask, that we actually give it a chance. I reckon we can get that together.
All right. I can undertake with the General Manager to have that taken up with the Commissioner.
Yeah, could we have it corrected?
And it's then up to the Commissioner to do so, but we'll certainly push that for you. I did say DST. DST is engaged by both Kingborough Council and the Huon Valley Council to work on tourism in the southern region, and we will take that up for you as I indicated. Yes?
There's more opportunity in the Huon than just that. Last week, on the 6th of November, the Russell Ridge, on the Sunday, the 6th of November, the Russell Ridge Land Care Group conducted an extensive working bee on the Billy Brown's Falls track up Judd's Creek. Now, if you go to Jubbery and then you go up Judd's Creek Road for 11 k's, you come to the car park of Bill Brown's Falls track. And what I can guarantee you when you go in there will be pink and purple heath, old growth manfern, old growth eucalypt, leatherwood in flower, and it's a child's proof track, and it's permanently dry. No matter how much it rains, that track will be dry, and it's half an hour into the falls and half an hour out. Now my problem is, going back to this map, we've got it indicated at the wrong spot. We've got it indicated at a Jubbery intersection. When it's not a Jubbery intersection, it's 11 k's into the wilderness and not easy to find. And so I ask the destination Southern Tasmania could truly represent Bill Brown's Falls on the map. Even better still, put a signpost at Jubbery intersection, because that's where we need it. In return, also on the road, it goes into forestry lands, and we need some gravel in the road. In the forestry, there's about maybe 4 or 5 k's that are pretty patchy. And if we had a little bit of gravel in there, a little bit of heart from the Kingborough Council, with some 100 mil stone in those holes, you've got yourself another ace up your sleeve. Another tourism ace between there and Lake Skinner. These are major draw cards, and they cost you nothing. Absolutely nothing to do it.
Okay, we'll certainly take that up on your behalf again.
Could we adequately put Bill Brown's Falls on the map where it's supposed to be, and then possibly signpost it at the Jubbery intersection so that everybody that comes down to find it can actually find it?
Yep, well, as I said, we'll certainly take those up, but it's certainly the Huon Valley Council will need to do that, but we will take that up with the Commissioner. It's a pleasure.
desperately needs your help. That's why I'm here. Thank you, councillors, for your time.
That's a pleasure. Thank you. Are there any further questions? None? Thank you. Questions on notice from councillors? On page 3, signage on Leslie Road was a question asked by Councillor Atkinson and a response on both page 3 and 4. On page 3, sorry. Page 4, there was a question from Councillor Bastone regarding the old gymnasium at Kingston Park, and again as a response on page 4. Councillor Atkinson asked a question regarding roadside spraying, and also on page 4 is a response regarding that question from Councillor Atkinson. The next item I have is on page 5, questions without notice from councillors. Councillor Grace.
Thank you, Mayor. I've been alerted that Councillor carting a huge quantity of gravel from this end of town to Bruny Island. Can we find out what the purpose is, where it's going and what it's costing for that gravel? Secondly...
So your question is, what is the gravel...
What is the gravel being used for? What roads and what is it costing to export it from this side to the island?
Got that. Thank you.
Second question is, also I've been advised, Mr. Mayor, that we have our own day labour workforce from this side of the island transported daily to Bruny Island to carry out road sheeting and trucks and plant. Again, the public have asked, can the General Manager advise whether it is cost effective?
Thank you. And the General Manager will take those on notice, obviously. Further questions? There are none. Thank you for that, Councillor Grace. I have a motion on which notice has been given from Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Atkinson, do you want to withdraw that in view that there is a report coming on waste? You want to move that? Do I have a seconder? Councillor Fox. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. One of Kingra's major attractions is our natural bushland, beaches and coastline. Council's emphasised in the strategic plan the importance of the healthy environment, especially our marine and coastal environment. It's clearly written there, and it says that we actively support local communities to care and protect the environment. Plastic food containers and cutlery from events enter the natural environment, either deliberately or accidentally. Someone drops their fork while eating a curry at the farmer's market, or they can't find a bin and leave their drink cup a day on the beach. Much of this plastic gets into our waterways. It gets into, you know, our Kingston Beach that we say is our major attraction. It makes its way to the coast or out to sea. We've all read about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, an estimated between 700,000 and 15 million square kilometres of ocean thick with plastic debris. The rubbish that does get collected gets mixed up with general waste, which we truck to Copping, where it gets buried in the ground, and like all plastic, it remains there forever. It breaks smaller, but it doesn't disappear. I believe Council should set an example to the community by actively encouraging food suppliers at Council-run supported events to use biodegradable, recyclable or multiple-use food containers, demonstrating to the community we think care of our natural environment matters. All I'm asking for is to see what options there are. I want, as Mr. Evers said, this, you know, can be part of our waste strategy, but I think this particular issue should be highlighted as somewhere we can set an example to say this is something that we believe in as a council. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Percy.
Thank you, Mayor. Many community events are marginal at the moment in the cost of running the event, so we need to also consider the cost versus benefit. The largest event in Kingston, which is the Dome Beach, which I was chairman of for many years, we're always considerate of the amount of non-recyclable waste. The main food items sold were a sausage and hamburger on a slice of bread and a piece of disposable paper. Other vendors, there were ones that operated a place like the Taste of Tasmania, so, and provide similar eating utensils, bowls, etc., as they would at those events. In 2015, a day on the beach, worked with Sarah Lowe, from Sustainable Systems and Solutions to review the amount of waste on and what impact the event was having socially, environmentally, economically, and the review was quite positive. I've got some emails from her to say what she was doing for that event. She says, we are preparing a document to go out to the stallholders which outlines the following: why we need to reduce waste at events, strategies for this year's and future events, signage for stalls, recycling bins, etc., tips on how stallholders can reduce waste generated, and links to assist stallholders and provide further information for future events, compostable alternatives, etc. And there's other emails where she was analysing the waste situation so they could provide feedback for the next event. I'm in support of the idea of this, but I must I will not be in favour of this motion, as I agree with Mr. Reeves' comments that we need to look at the overall waste management strategy rather than an ad hoc approach, and therefore will not support this motion until the overall waste management strategy is presented to Council. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Fox.
I guess if I could remind councillors that the motion actually says provide a report. And to me that is information, and I welcome the information that Councillor Percy's presented. I'd like to see that elaborated on. We've obviously got some really expert people in our community with knowledge on this issue, and maybe look at the costs that are and the cost benefits of doing this, because we are encouraging people to have markets, to have stalls, to have various functions. And I think it's our responsibility to make sure that they are environmentally responsible in the way that they provide utensils and packaging for these events. And I think it is an important responsibility that I would like to see a report on. It may well be that we're already doing all we can and then we can take full credit. But if we're not, there might be ways of improving the situation. And I think it lies side by side with the officers' comments, who are already looking at waste minimisation, and this is all part of the same sort of thing. So I do support that we ask for a report, and I support the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Like Councillor Fox, I'd be interested to see a report on this. I would like to see us get some more information to consider it. I don't think it has to be necessarily as part of the waste management strategy. There's no reason why we can't show some leadership in this area, as other councils have done, the Hobart City Council, the Taste of Tasmania being one of them. So I think there's a great opportunity here to get some facts and have a look at it and see whether it would be sustainable for stallholders and the like, but ultimately weigh that up with the benefits to our community in terms of the environment.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. I have a question to the mover of the motion. I'm wondering where you are directing your discouragement to. Is that to Kingborough solely, to Tasmania, to Australia, to Planet E? Which would it be?
I mean to discourage stallholders at events in Kingborough.
Kingborough, yep. Thank you. Further speakers? If not, I'll ask Councillor Atkinson to close debate. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm really glad to hear Councillor Percy's contribution, because that's fantastic that Day of the Beach is already addressing this. I don't see that's at odds with Council having a position on it as well. And as you mentioned, you know, there are stallholders that are already, you know, have had long history with Taste of Tasmania, and they've had this policy ever since Taste of Tasmania started, that all the, you know, bowls, cups, forks, whatever, have to be recyclable or compostable. As Councillor Reid said, this is a report, this is giving us more information. I think it's an important issue. I don't think it's at odds with the waste strategy that's already being produced, because this is not just talking about what we do with our recycling and so on. It's not just looking at the financial issue, but it's setting an impression to the community as to what we stand for as a council, and that this is an important thing, that the environment in Kingborough is important, and that we want to emphasise that. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Atkinson, second by Councillor Fox, that Kingborough Council officers provide a report to Council on ways to discourage provision of single-use plastic eating utensils, plates, cups, etc., and ensure the provision of recyclable collection facilities at Council-run and Council-supported events. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour, I'll ask Councillors Winter, Bastone, Fox, Berry, Atkinson, Reid and Wass. And opposing the motion, I have Councillors Grace, Councillor Percy, Councillor Chatterton. Motion is carried. Next item is on page 7. Planning Authority is now in session, so I remind councillors of that. So we'll move into the planning session at 5:50 p.m. The first item is delegated authority for the period 12th of October 2016 to the 1st of October 2016, and there is a recommendation on page 10. Thank you, Councillor Chadden, and thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillors, are there any questions or comments to start?
Yep.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. On page 8, the first one, DA 2016, number 293, a change of use from retail to bottle shop and associated signage at Westside Circle. I was interested whether this is the former Blockbuster location. I was interested whether we had had any communication from the Liquor Licensing Board in relation to councils, asking council what we thought of the location of that. I assume that it went out to public consultation and there were comments available to go back to the Liquor Licensing Board, but I note I do have some serious concerns about this one because of its location smack bang in the middle of an area where large numbers of children congregate, and there's rules about not being able to have bottle shops and licensed premises within 200 metres of schools, yet here we've got one where you could find at 3:30 in the afternoon more kids than you'd find in a school. So I'd be interested in what communication we had from them.
Mr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The application was for the planning approval side of it. They're still required to be licensed from the Liquor Licensing Board. I'm not aware, without taking it on notice, as to whether we've had any communications from them yet. Sometimes they make their planning application before they then get their licence, because the Licensing Board required the planning application first. So I'd have to check and take on notice as to whether we have had any communications from the Licensing Board.
Quite a few members of the public have raised this with me once the sign went up about it becoming a bottle shop, so there does seem to be some concern.
Thank you. Councillor Chadden.
On that point, if I may, Mayor, many years ago there was a planned bottle shop in that development. When Councillor Abbott was on council, and he was very vehement about a bottle shop going in there, because in those days the Kingston Hive was on the old site. But going back some time, I can't remember how many years, it would probably be 15 years ago or more, probably even more, there was a bottle shop planned there, and it'd be interesting if we could go back and see in our records what was actually put there, because there was objections and it was squashed at that time. So I'm just flagging that that did happen before.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Grace.
Yes, that's quite true. I was going to raise same subject because I do know the applicants, and some of the applicants are still alive, believe it or not, and they still own the complex. And they were refused on the grounds of... And I think they tried twice, and council itself refused it.
Councillors, I'll put the recommendation on page 10, moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Percy, that the report be noted. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. On page 11 is a development application for partial change of use to storage contractor's yard at 64 Channel Highway, Kingston, for Larkin Crease. I'll listen to your motion, Councillor Atkinson, as soon as I find the page. Yes?
That in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves the report of the Acting Manager Development Services be received, and the development application for a partial change of use to storage contractor's yard at 64 Channel Highway, Kingston, for Larkin Crease be rejected on grounds that it does not accord with the purpose of the general business zone described in the zone purpose statements, section 21.11 of the Kingsbury Interim Planning Scheme 2015.
Do I have a seconder? Councillor Fox. Just trying to get it on screen. I have it now. Councillor Atkinson, if you'd like to speak to the motion, please.
Thank you. When we're acting as a planning authority, we're told this is all about the planning scheme and assessing whether applications meet the planning scheme. The report's pretty clear. This is a discretionary use. The zone's general business zone, and this use is storage, and that's clearly laid out in the planning scheme. And I read the chapter about general business zone pretty carefully. Firstly, I also wanted to know whether what the zones for mattered. Now, the planning scheme says in 8.10.2, in determining an application for a permit for discretionary use, the planning authority must, in addition to the matters referred to in subclause 8.10.1, have regard to the purpose of the applicable zone and any relevant local area objectives or desired future character statements for the applicable zone. So I thought, well, I must find out what these are. So the general business zone says zone purpose statement to provide for business, community, food, professional or retail facilities serving a town or group of suburbs, to ensure the major centres provide for a range of convenience, goods and services, as well as some community services and facilities for municipal areas and surrounds, to provide a focus for employment at the municipal level, primarily in retailing, but complemented by a range of office-based employment, mainly in professional and personal services, to facilitate residential use above ground floor level, to ensure development is highly accessible by public transport, walking and cycling, to ensure the rural service centre provides for the daily and weekly needs of the community, to provide for a mix of retail and office-based employment servicing the local area, including a supermarket and a range of specialty shops, to provide a safe, comfortable and pleasant environment for workers, residents and visitors through the provision of high-quality urban spaces and urban design. And then I looked at the local area objectives. For Kingston, it says a number of general business areas that are outside of the main central Kingston area will provide a range of retail and other commercial functions. I cannot, by any stretch of the imagination, see this application meeting those purposes or objectives for the general business zone. The land's been zoned as general business. The planning scheme provides a clear statement of how each area of municipality is to be developed. This application doesn't meet the requirements of the planning scheme. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Fox.
My main concern is the fact that there is residential land surrounding this property on two sides, opposite on Channel Highway, and the people in those houses objected quite strongly originally when the KFC development went ahead. The reason for that was noise and increased traffic and also lighting. But it concerns me that now they've got to put up with trucks coming and going at all hours of the day and night, up till 10 o'clock at night in some cases and 9 o'clock on Sundays and public holidays. And on the other side of on the southern side of the actual property, there is a substantial dwelling. It's zoned residential, and there is in fact a residential house on the very property that is between them and between this development proposal and the, let's call it the KFC site. the movements of trucks and dust emanating from this site and the untidy appearance of this nature of work are not going to contribute to places like JCAR and Repco and the car wash and other office facilities in this area, as well as food consumption in the area next door. But my main concern is the impact that it will have on residents and the loss of amenity to residential land immediately next to it. And I understand it originally was residential land. It's only recently been changed to the current zoning of general business, probably because it was downgraded by the use of storage equipment and so on. But to now consolidate that position, I think, is not really in the interest of the community and is detrimental to both its neighbours. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Chatterley?
I've got a question to start with, Mayor, to our Acting Manager of Development Services. Would the motion that has been put forward by Councillor Atkinson stand up in tribunal?
Mr. Stevenson, would you like to give us some details probably around that without compromising ourselves?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I probably can't answer that question, obviously, because that would be a matter to be determined by the tribunal and the relevant parties to put their case. In this particular instance, the use class is discretionary, and as Councillor Atkinson has pointed out, there are provisions in the scheme that require Council to consider a number of things when considering whether a discretionary use is appropriate on a site, and that includes the zone purpose statements. So it would be a legitimate argument to use the zone purpose statements if the argument stands up that they are not, that this particular use is not consistent with those.
Thank you.
Follow-up question, Mayor. Thank you. When we, as a planning authority in the past, have decided we didn't support an application before us, and that's what is moved at the moment, we've had to work with the staff to get listings of things that will give us a good case, and that's why I asked that question. I don't disagree with the mover and the seconder's comments at all. I don't like it, but just because I don't like it doesn't mean to say that I should be voting for the motion, because I should be voting for the motion only as a planning authority if we, as this council, have got strong bones about knocking it back and saying no. So that's where I'm sitting at the moment, saying I understand and I concur with the comments that have been passed, but I'm not going to approve anything one way or the other if it means that we're going to get our bottom kicked if we go forward and it costs us money. Now, that's where I'm at. You know, and if we're going to have a situation where we want to overturn the suggested motion, which I have no problem with, I want to make sure we have a watertight case to support that case and make sure if there's anything else that can be added to what Councillor Atkinson has said should be included. And I'm therefore saying to staff, because when we've said no before, staff have come up with some other things to help us form a no case.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Mr. Stevenson.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. In this particular case, I believe if you were to refuse the application, the zone purpose statements would be the basis upon which to do so.
Thank you. I'll come back to that shortly, Councillor Chadden. I'll go to Councillor Gross.
I have great concerns also, like Councillor Chatterton, knowing that block of land up there. It's been there for many, many years. Many years. It's been used for many, many uses. Many uses. Sweeping trucks have been in there. All sorts of things have been in there over the years. So I just find it difficult, and I thought, Mr. Mayor, correct me wrong, but I thought that we made a decision that if any of us want now to refuse an application that's been approved by council, we're supposed to give you a written report on why we are asking for it to be refused. Now, I thought we accepted that because we had some stuff on Bruny Island or somewhere where we were arguing the point all the time about on the refusal. Now, if that's not the case, I beg your pardon, but I just going to find this very, very difficult to stand up anywhere when this block of land can be proven that it's been used for various things over the last 20-odd years.
Thank you, Councillor Gross. I will be happy to adjourn the meeting for 5 minutes shortly if you wish, but I'll go to Councillor Reid now.
Thank you. I agree with the alternative motion that's been put forward, and I believe that there are grounds that are outlined in the motion which would give us the basis for refusal. And it's my understanding that Councillor Atkinson hasn't just drafted this himself, but he had it drafted by the staff of the Planning Department. Following discussion with them, so it's certainly not one. I'm not aware of the procedure that Councillor Grace is saying that we put in place, because I wasn't. I can't even recall the discussion. Maybe I wasn't at that particular meeting, but I don't believe that there was any procedure put in place where we had to provide a written report if we wanted to do an alternative motion. I do recall the discussion about requiring an alternative motion that clearly articulated the reasons for refusal, and I believe that this certainly encapsulates it, and I'd support the alternative motion.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. General Manager's advised me that that is the one and only grounds that we have for refusal, if that's the way we wish to go. Councillor Winter?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that my recollection was that councillors were given advice as opposed to instruction that they should consult with staff about alternative planning motions. It sounds like that's what Councillor Atkinson has quite rightly done. Having said that, my view, despite a very reasonable argument by Councillor Atkinson, is that the report and the recommended motion is appropriate, and I'll foreshadow that if the current motion is lost, I'll move the recommended motion as printed in the papers.
Thank you. Do I have further debate, or will I go to Councillor Atkinson to close debate? Looks like it's yours, Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. I found this interesting to hear the comments around the table. As has been mentioned, I did discuss with the planning staff and with the General Manager the appropriateness of the wording there. The reason I haven't listed out all the individual clauses for the zone is that it doesn't apply to any of them, so it seems strange to sort of list them all, and because this is what's referring to in section 21.1.1. I don't think there's any mention in the scheme of prior use being a reason to approve an application, just because that block has been used for something other than general business in the past. It's now zoned general business. It's pretty clear what a general business zone is. When you read it, I am a layman, but anyone reading that can get an idea of what that zone is. If we continue to let it be used for uses other than what it's zoned as, it will continue to be that kind of block. We don't do this with other zones. We don't say, look, you can build some units there even though you're not allowed to because it feels like it's the right thing to do. We zone things for reasons. That's what planning is. We say, we're planning this place should be like this. This is what we want that area to be. That block is 30% of the general business zone for that parcel of the general business zone. And we're saying that can be used for, what's a commercial or light industrial area. It's not, it's not zoned as that. It's zoned as general business, and I think that we should enforce that the use of any change in use should be for a general business use. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Atkinson, seconded by Councillor Fox, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Acting Manager Development Services be received, and the development application for a partial change of use to storage, that's Contractor's Yard, at 64 Channel Highway, Kingston for Lark and Crease be refused on grounds that it does not accord with the purpose of the general business zone described in the Zone Purpose Statement Section 21.1.1 of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015. I'll ask councillors who wish to support that motion to please say aye. And for those that wish to oppose it, to say no. No. We'll have a division or a show of hands then, please. Those in favour are Councillor Bastone, Councillor Percy, Councillor Chatterton, Councillor Fox, Councillor Berry, Councillor Atkinson and Councillor Reet. And opposing the motion are Councillors Winter, Grace and Wass. Motion is carried. The next item is on page 28. Development application for two units with relaxation of rear boundary setback at 55 Diamond Drive, Blackmans Bay, for P. Paramiswar and ZM Desai. There is a recommendation on page 39. And I have a mover in Councillor Grace, and I'm looking for a seconder. Councillor Percy. Councillor Grace.
Mr Mayor, I haven't a lot to say about this. The report explains it all, I believe.
Thank you. Do I have any other councillor wish to debate the item? If not, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Grace, seconded by Councillor Percy, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Acting Manager Development Service be received and the development application for 2 units with relaxation of rear boundary setback at 55 Diamond Drive, Blackmans Bay, for P. Paramiswar and ZM Desai be approved, subject to the following conditions, and there are 9 conditions as printed on pages 39 and 40. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. What page? The next item is on page 50. Development application for a shed at Channel Heritage Museum, 1755 Channel Highway, Margate, for PDA surveyors, and the time being 6:10. Councillor Grace has left the meeting. And there is a recommendation on page, 62. I have a mover in Councillor Chadden, and I have a seconder in Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Chadden.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, this is a very worthwhile development down there in Margate. We've supported the development since its inception. It was an old quarry which was converted in and built on for the museum, and we as Council supported the museum coming from Snug, moving up to its current position. The expansions to which they wish to use this for is for machinery, and there has been substantial donations, and I know even Councillor Grace has managed to obtain some old farm machinery for the museum, and this is what this particular shed is partly going to be used for. It's going to be an extended asset. It fits the planning scheme, and I think it should be given all our support. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Any other councillor wish to make comment, Councillor Fox?
Well, being on the committee, I've seen this project being planned by the group, and I think it's a very worthwhile project. The equipment has come off Bruny Island, some of it from Councillor Grace's brother or brother-in-law, but I feel that it is very old. It's currently being housed by a member of the community, and it's important that this equipment goes undercover before the harvesting season. So if we could agree to this, I think it would make a big difference to the presentation of the equipment in good order. And I think it would add to the interest of the Heritage Centre by having things like this for older people who remember using it and younger people who might be intrigued by the type of equipment that was on farms in the olden days and how much work it was to make a living from the land, let's say. So I think it's a really interesting project, and I think it deserves council support. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Winter?
I answered the question for myself while I was waiting. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Atkinson, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Acting Manager Development Service be received and that the development application for a shed at Channel Heritage Museum, 1755 Channel Highway, Margate, for PDA surveyors be approved, subject to the following conditions, and there are 9 conditions as listed in page 63-64. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. We'll just wait for Councillor Grace to return. Councillor Grace has returned at 6:14 PM. Next item is on page 80, development application for shed requiring relaxation of side boundary setback at 243 Lighthouse Road, South Bruny, certificate of title 79377 folio 10 for MCE building design, and there is a recommendation on page 85. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I think it says it all with the answers to the representations that the the construction of an agriculture storage shed on the property as being actively farmed is considered appropriate in a rural landscape. So I think that's one of the reasons. And also, relaxation is considered appropriate in the instance given the nature and use of the site. I know it's close to what I think was a private road or a reserve. Wasn't a main road, and it won't be seen from many people apart from driving down that road. That's just a quiet area. It's not a main road anyway. Bye.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Any other councillor wish to speak? I'll then put the recommendation, moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Reid, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority resolves that the report of the Acting Manager Development Service be received and that the development application for a shed requiring relaxation of side boundary setback at 243 Lighthouse Road, South Bruny, Certificate of Title 79377, Folio 10 for MCE Building Design be approved subject to the following conditions, and there are two conditions as listed on page 85. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 91, a draft amendment to the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015, amendment to Table 12.1 of the Kingborough Interim Planning Scheme 2015 for the low-density residential zone to include a site-specific qualifications for a minimum lot size of 2,000 metres squared at 3842 Linden Road, Bonnet Hill, for Ms E. Riley. There is a recommendation on page 93. Thank you, Councillor Berry. Thank you, Councillor Chatterton.
Make sure that that's the amended piece we have before us, not what's in the agenda, Councillor, Chair, Mayor. Isn't that the piece we've got on the table?
No.
It's not that one?
No, that is...
Oh, it reads exactly the same. That's why I asked the question.
I think that's page 97 or... Yeah, 96, okay. 97, that one.
Oh, replica.
So, 93, recommendation moved by Councillor Berry, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Berry, do you wish to speak to the motion?
I won't say a lot. I mean, this basically is a procedural motion which this passes forward to the Planning Commission, and the report explains all that.
Thank you. Councillor Chadden, do you wish to add?
No, thank you.
I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Berry, seconded by Councillor Chadden, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Planning Authority Committee resolves that the report of the Manager Development Services be received, and that 1. Council advised the Tasmanian Planning Commission that 1. Representation was received in accordance with Section 39(2) of the former provisions of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act 1993, and 2. A copy of this report is forwarded to the Tasmanian Planning Commission, being the Council's assessment of the merit of each representation in accordance with Section 39(2)(b), and 3. Council resolves that no modification to draft amendment PSA 2016-1 is required and advises the Tasmanian Planning Commission accordingly. Councillors in favour, if you would please say aye. Those against, please say no. Then that is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 94, and this is the item that has that sheet of paper that Councillor Chadden referred to. The Land Use Planning and Approvals Act delegations, and the recommendation is on that sheet of paper that was circulated, page 96, 97 in the agenda.
I don't have the document in front of me because I gave it back to Mr. Ferrier, but I'd happily move the motion.
I will get a copy for you, Councillor Fox, and as soon as you've read that, we will accept your moving. Just check that first, please.
Yeah, could someone highlight what the differences are between the printed copy and the copy that we've previously read?
I'll ask Mr. Ferrier to do that for you.
Through the chair, what had happened was I didn't transpose the part that the delegations which were in the report correctly, and if you look in the recommendation on the agenda which was previously circulated, there's only section 33(5) should have the text which relates to that particular section of the Act, and then there should be another paragraph headed section 39, subsection 2, which would then have that correct text, which is current, which was under Part C. So it was I just missed the text which actually relates to section 33.5, which was in the report but didn't make it into the recommendation.
And the other aspect was under Part A, that's been repeated.
I've repeated the same sentence.
So I have a mover in Councillor Fox. I'm looking for a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox, do you wish to say anything?
I'd be happy to be guided by staff to make this list of conditions a bit clearer, but from reading the report it seemed logical.
Thank you. Any further councillor wish to comment? If not, I will put the recommendation moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Grace. I won't read it out. That news sheet has it all. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? That is carried unanimously. Next item is on page 98, and the open session of council will resume at 6:21. And the first report of officers is a hearing petition to amend sealed plan 23227 affecting properties at Nolan Crescent, Adelong Drive and Foley Road, Kingston, for Emma Riley and Associates on behalf of D'Avalon Developers Proprietor Limited. And I have a mover in Councillor Fox, and I just need 106. So Councillor Fox has moved. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox.
I guess basically this relates to the properties in the diagram which would be part of this covenant and would all now, if this motion is passed, be able to subdivide their blocks into one extra lot so that each lot would be capable of housing two houses. It did come to this council in the past, but I think all the people who put in presentations or representations, or most of them, are now in agreement that they are accepting this situation as being recommended. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Percy. Sorry, Councillor Berry first and then Councillor Percy. Councillor Berry.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Lifting covenants is always a difficult decision, or at least I find it is. Fundamentally, I have difficulty supporting the recommendation. What we have in front of us is a compromise. It's a situation that the compromise, it's kind of a halfway house. I mean, a covenant either is removed or not. I don't like this sort of halfway house compromise situation we've been presented with. I acknowledge the fact I've been read through the submissions. There didn't seem to be a lot of enthusiasm in either direction. Certainly the one person who was objecting to it was enthusiastic. I acknowledge that I think there were three others who supported it, but if you have a look at the map, there are quite a lot of blocks there, and I was surprised that there wasn't a little more interest. And we also have a somewhat unusual situation that we were not actually conducting a hearing. At least it's got to be a reading, I presume, and not a hearing, because we don't actually have anyone in front of us to question. So I'm not in favour of this recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Berry. Councillor Percy.
Yeah, I'm in two minds myself, so I need to be convinced, I think, because seems to, if you chip away long enough, I suppose you'll get to where you want to go. But it says in here that with the suitability of the existing infrastructure servicing any proposed subdivision development on the subject, lots would be taken into consideration. I think one of the reasons before was the stormwater at the back of some of these people's properties, whenever it rains a lot, some of the stormwater caps get pushed up because there's just not enough ability to take away the stormwater at the moment. So I think that was raised last time this came up, and I don't know whether anything's been changed there or whether we're considering doing something with the stormwater in that area. Says here also the road network in this area is a standard, fully constructed residential street. I'd say it was very standard because I know people that live in Nolan Crescent. I go up there quite often, and it seems very narrow at the moment, especially with now the buses are coming there. Also, it says, as I think the applicant's response was, if the council held a position otherwise, it could have protected them through other means within their planning scheme. But my thoughts are that if you've got a covenant on a block, that's probably about as permanent as you can get, because I was told last time this came up that the councillors, I think, have been around for a while, said that they could never remember a covenant being removed from a title or whatever. I don't know whether that's correct or not, but that seems to stand in my mind. And also, as Councillor Berry said, it says here that there's a lot of people in that area that agree with it. Well, I've gone through and ticked the ones that have approved it or in favour of it, but it's still there's heaps of gaps with people that haven't. If I just went through here, there's block 29, 33, 35, 37, 41, 38, 36, 32, 30, and all the other ones are smaller blocks, so they probably wouldn't be able to subdivide anyway, so perhaps we can probably, well, not dismiss them, but they're probably in a situation where they probably wouldn't have an opinion anyway. So I'm just a little bit concerned that we would remove a covenant, and then maybe next time we could go through the same process where people are trying to get three on each block, and then before you know it, you've got units on there. This chipping away, like is happening here, I just don't feel comfortable with it, because as I said, a covenant should be nearly as permanent as there can be on a title. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I know this area well because I lived in Nolan Crescent for 18 years, and I remember door-knocking the area on many occasions and residents commenting on the fact that they, liked the larger block size, and that was one of the reasons why they lived in that area. I am also well aware, because it's the route I take my children to school, that it is a very busy street, and so I think that the traffic concerns are justified. But at the end of the day, I don't think that any of the reasons that we rejected this application when we previously had it before us have changed. And so they're articulated there on page 99 and 100 that we were not satisfied that the evidence was sufficient to persuade us to overturn the rights of those parties who wished to retain it. The covenant was present when all owners purchased their land, and in fact I recall asking that question of the representatives on behalf of the owners who attended that hearing that we had. I said, were they aware that the covenant was in place at the time of purchase? Yes, they were. They specifically bought it in the hope that we would then overturn it so that they could subdivide and put additional properties on there. And the other reasons that are listed on there, clearly there are still residents who are opposed to it. I said at that time that I wouldn't... I believed that it was not fair to this council that people purchase properties knowing that there are covenants on them and then come to us and expect them to take them off, and that I would always vote against that, because I think it's not a very fair thing to do in terms of us and other local residents, particularly in this case where the covenant affects them as well. So I won't be supporting this application.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Councillor Chatterton.
Very interesting what Councillor Reid has just said. Because, you know, there are a lot of other subdivisions that have gone on when these sort of covenants no longer seem to go on the subdivisions as they did in those days. And yes, this has been here before us, and I have sat here and listened to a hearing in the past. There are a lot of other large lots in various places in Kingston and Blackmans Bay, such as Brightwater Road, such as Burwood Drive, that these people bought into those larger lots for exactly the reason to which Councillor Reid alluded to. However, times have changed, and we're seeing a lot of those larger lots being subdivided into two lots or a second dwelling built on those lots. They've been able to do it because there was no covenants put on when those subdivisions went in. when these types of subdivisions went in, yes, the people who bought the land at the time were aware of those covenants and they supported, that's why they bought the larger lots and that's why they built the houses there. But in a lot of cases, people move on and the people come to the area thinking, well, yes, I like that, it's got a larger block. They're probably not aware of those covenants as much as they would be when they bought it as a vacant block. And unfortunately, people say, well, gee whiz, it's too big for me. I don't want to move, but the block's too big. If I put another dwelling on there, I can stay on the existing lot that I'm on because I don't have as big a lot to look after. It's become, I'm ageing, I can't look after it. I'm not saying that's the case for this particular person, but I'm just alluding that these are some of the reasons that people go through this process. And I think we need to have an open mind when we look at these types of things, A, because those covenants don't apply and can't be put on new subdivisions as they could be when this particular piece of Nolan Crescent was subdivided way back in the 1900s. So times have changed, and I think we need to think about it would allow infill housing. Infill housing is very beneficial to council. The road's already there, the stormwater, the footpaths, and all the services are there. We're getting another development on that block of which we get rates for. So infill housing is very economical. It's also been supported by both sides of politics. Labor and Liberals have supported infill housing, and we're seeing it through areas of Blackmans Bay in particular. And it becomes what's happening with infill housing, you've got services that are already there, such as your shops, your supermarkets, your bottle shops, or whatever else that you need, and whereas we're not getting as much urban sprawl. So it does preclude a lot of urban sprawl, and I think it's worth a lot of weight to think about supporting this particular application.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was going to speak, but there's some interesting points that Councillor Chatterton raised there. The ageing in place one, I think, is a really interesting issue of people that have had a house and they have a social network in the area they live and they don't want to move, but they no longer need a big house, and how to deal with that. And similarly, the infill development. Although I am concerned about the council's finances, I'd never promote infill development purely from a point of view of raising more rates, but there are legitimate reasons to do with efficiency of infrastructure and social cohesion and things that I think infill housing is appropriate in some areas. I am, however, hearing some of the other arguments that have been raised about this particular covenant, and I'm also not yet convinced that it should be changed, that people have moved there knowing it's there. There's been no specific cases raised of people who are saying, well, I want a second dwelling because I can't look after the block or whatever. And the issue that has been raised by several people of people purchasing blocks, knowing that, hoping that the council will then review the covenant. I don't think the defence that someone moving there didn't know there was a covenant really stands up. I mean, I've purchased several houses in my life and I always get someone to provide me with all the legal details with the block, and the house is the largest purchase most people make, and I think that most people go through some sort of due process or due diligence when they do that. So I'm not convinced this should be removed. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Fox, if you'd like to close debate.
Yes. One of the reasons that the previous applicants were against removing the covenant because they felt it wasn't fair that one or two benefited from lifting the covenant when everybody else didn't. So they felt it was either all in or all out, and that was one of the reasons I upheld that decision. But here, this would be giving the opportunity to everyone, and item 5.3 states that property owners would not be obliged to develop their lots and could choose to retain lots in their current form. However, the potential would exist for all lot owners to develop their properties further within the above restrictions. And it also states that there are no planning reasons to refuse the proposed amendment. So it surprises me that traffic issues, infrastructure issues are not able to be used to refuse this. So I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Grace, that in accordance with Council Policy 1.1, Delegated Authority Policy, the Council resolves that the report of the Deputy General Manager be received and that the schedule of easements for sealed plan number 23227 be amended as follows. Amending the covenant in the schedule of easements SP23227 by deleting the word 1 and replacing it with the word 2 and including an S at the end of the wording dwelling, such that it reads, 1, not to erect on the said lot any more than 2 detached residential dwellings. Councillors, I'll now ask for you to vote. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against? We'll have a division or show of hands, please. Those in favour are Councillor Winter, Councillors Winter, Grace, Chatterton, Fox and Wass. And those opposing the motion are Councillor Bastone, Councillor Berry, Councillor Atkinson and Councillor Reed and Councillor Percy, which according to me is 5-5. The motion is lost.
Mr Mayor, before we go on, I realise that I forgot to mention a conflict of interest that I have in an item on page 113, which I'll leave the room for.
113, thank you.
Sorry.
Yep, okay, thank you. So the next item is on page 111, Kingborough Ward Selection Committee, and there is a recommendation on page 112, and what we're looking there for, councillors, is three councillors to assist the Deputy Mayor in the recommendation to General Council.
Can I just speak to that before you put that? Because it's important that whoever nominates is aware that we have to meet tomorrow towards the end of the day. So if you're available at about 4:30 tomorrow, that's terrific. Otherwise, we're on a tight time frame.
It does say Tuesday the 15th, yes.
Yes.
So, councillors, I'm happy to accept the nomination, the mover and seconder with some names. No one at this stage. Thank you, Councillor Root. Thank you, Councillor Grace. We're halfway there. Names, I guess we could say, who is interested to be on this group and available tomorrow?
Well, I've done it before and I've not been going, I'm more than happy.
Councillor Grace, anyone else? What about you, Mayor?
No, I can't. It's you.
Councillor Chatterton?
I could be there, however, I believe I'm aware of one or two applicants and I don't believe
okay.
I should be on the panel.
Okay.
I don't know whether they've been come in, but I know of a couple and I don't think it'd be fair if I was on the panel if they're there.
I have one councillor prepared to, and that's Councillor Grace. Is there anyone else? No, I think you need to be there, unfortunately. Yeah. There's nothing, Councillor Berry?
Well, we have served before the mast for many years now. I think I'll come along if no one else is available.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to go on it if necessary. I've just asked the General Manager, there's nothing precluding me.
Are you available at 4:30 tomorrow?
Well, if I do this, I'll have to be, won't I?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Just let me check.
Thank you.
So we have councillors Berry, Grace and Wass to assist the Deputy Mayor. Unless there's someone else that wants to go on there and take me out, I'm happy. That's the motion then, moved by Councillor Reed, seconded by Councillor Grace, that Council appoints the following three councillors to assist the Deputy Mayor in the assessment of candidates for the 2017 Kingborough Awards and that these councillors be available to meet on Tuesday the 15th, 2016 for that purpose. And as I said, Councillor Grace, Councillor Berry, Councillor Wass. I'll put the recommendation. Those in favour, please say aye. Those against? It's carried unanimously. And you'll be leaving this one, Councillor Reed, at, 6:39. And it's on page 114, Community Grants. if I have a mover and a seconder. Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Atkinson.
As usual with these grants, the staff have assessed the applications against the criteria that we provide, and I'm happy with the recommendations they've made. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
I have a question that the defibrillator and training was rejected for one group and passed for another group, was rejected for a volunteer group, and I was just wondering why.
I'll ask Miss Jenny to give us an update there, please.
Unfortunately, the second group didn't meet the guidelines in terms of contributing a matching 50% cost.
Thank you, Miss Jenny. Councillor Winter.
Yes, we've seen the Kingston Beach Golf Club unsuccessful for a few of these. Is there any particular reason? Are they not meeting the criteria, or is there another issue with their submissions?
Ms. Denny?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, Councillor Winter, as you suggested, they're not meeting the criteria, and largely they put forward general maintenance projects which don't fit with the criteria.
Thanks.
Councillor Chatterton?
I've just got a question in regards number six, Crime Stoppers Tasmania. Crime Stoppers Tasmania is a Tasmanian thing, not a Kingbrith, particularly just a Kingbrith thing. I was just questioning that, and also, that's the one. That was the main one I'm questioning, because, you know, we've got Neighbourhood Watch and State Treasurer of Neighbourhood Watch is in the gallery at the moment behind me. We do a lot of work for Neighbourhood Watch, and there's only one or two Neighbourhood Watch groups left in Kingborough, and then all of a sudden this Crime Stoppers coming along. I'm just a little bit stunned. I'd like to know a bit more, how come we're picking a Tasmanian thing?
I'll ask Miss Jenny to give her opinions, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Crime Stoppers focus certain programs within certain regions, so they did contact us a few months back. A number of councils across the state do support them in different capacities, and as they've applied and they've met the criteria, they were suggested as a recipient.
Thank you. Nothing else to add, Councillor Chad?
Sorry?
Nothing else to add?
I'd like to know a bit more of what they're going to do. I'm iffy on this one. I haven't got enough information there on this. What are they going to do? I mean, Crime Stoppers have done a lot of work in Glenorchy, and particularly Lockett and Leavitt, which was part of Neighbourhood Watch at any rate. And I'd just be interested to know more on what's planned with this, because, as I say, there's a lot of Kingborough-based things out there, and $5,000 is the top amount of money we're giving out. I've got a question mark.
Thank you.
Board on it.
I'm just going to ask Miss Jenny whether she can give us any information on what the Crime Stoppers proposal is.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have a lot of detail with me, obviously, but the summary is that it's a program targeting the Kingborough region, and these funds will be spent in our immediate municipality to focus on the areas that are listed here. It's all about printing and promoting through the media in our local area.
Thank you. Councillor Grace.
Well, can we get further information on it, or hold this one over
We can get further information, which will be forthcoming tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
Or the next day.
That we'll have to deal with it at the next council.
I'm happy to look at two ways. One, to defer the item till the next meeting, or alternatively, if you so desire, to approve the ones with the exception of number six for consideration at the next meeting.
Yep.
Is there any problem in deferring?
I'm in your hands, Councillor.
No, I'm looking at timelines for which staff have to act, etc. Is there any problem in...
I'll ask Miss Jenny now.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have set the date as the 16th of December for awarding, so I'm not aware of exactly what has to happen beforehand, but I believe we would have enough time to present at another meeting.
Thank you. Our next meeting is the 28th.
I think, Mr. Mayor, in fairness to all those, and in case we don't agree with one, that money could be reallocated if we don't agree with it, of course. But I think perhaps, in fairness to the lot, we'd probably be better to defer the whole lot, and therefore I'd move a deferral motion.
Deferred to the 28th,
yes,
council meeting 28th of November?
Correct.
Do I have a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Gross. I'll put the recommendation.
Could I just ask a question?
No.
Oh, okay.
Procedural motion.
Ah, cool.
Sorry. Moved by Councillor Chatton, seconded by Councillor Grace that this item be deferred until the council meeting 28th of November 2016. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
Aye.
We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour are Councillors Winter, Grace, Percy, Chatterton, Fox and Wass, and opposing Councillors Bastone, Berry and Atkinson. Motion is carried. Just for your information, Councillor Reek, that item has been deferred to the next meeting. We'll move on to page 117, appointment to members of council special meetings, and there was another two-page paper that went out. Unfortunately, the nominations were received within the time but weren't passed on to the appropriate person. Henceforth, a number of names, I think three names, were missed off, and this one is the total one. So on that basis, we do have a recommendation.
I so move.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Thank you, Councillor Reek. Is there any discussion?
Only to say that it's wonderful to get this many applicants, and there are a lot of people out there who are doing a lot of good work, and it's very much appreciated. Thank you.
Agreed. Thank you. I'll put that recommendation then. And that is moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Reith. Approval will be given for the appointment of the members to the special committees of council as follows, and they are, as I said, printed on that handout. Councillors in favour, please say aye. Those against? That is carried unanimously. The next item is on page 120, Beretta and Bruny Island transfer station fees, and there is a recommendation on page 123. Thank you, Councillor Percy. Thank you, Councillor Winter. So I have a mover in Councillor Percy, second in Councillor Winter. Councillor Percy.
Right. Yeah, no, I think as a responsible council we need to ensure that there's a break even for KWS. Even though there, it says that we are competitive with others, I know there's an 18% difference between Hobart and Beretta, and also Glenorchy and Beretta, 28% for the general waste, but as I explained there, it's mainly due to the transport of our waste down to Copping. I think when we communicate this to people, because it's going to be very important, that we should highlight the additional costs associated with transporting and Copping. I thought it was a bit... There was something in there to say that maybe we shouldn't do it because of the round, because $11 isn't a very easy to collect fee. But then again, you know, we've gone from 5 to 10, so through that we've probably gone from 6, 8, 7, 8, 9, which wouldn't be. And then surely we're not going to wait till we get up to $15 before we start putting an increase, because when I've been down to Beretta, certainly it's not that busy that people haven't got time to get out a bit of change. So that's definitely not an excuse for not putting it up. So I agree with putting up the prices to $11, $110 and $11 for the three categories. I think we need to back up our long-term financial plans. Although we need to be flexible, we cannot deviate on every increase in revenue or increase in expenses that is put to us. We cannot afford to have another $50,000 black hole in our budget. And I'd also like to know, what is KWS doing to address the current shortfall of 28,000 year to date? So if somebody could probably advise me on that as well, please, because I think we need to have this break even down there. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ferry, are you in a position to answer that question?
Through the chair, as I indicated in the report, there is a larger deficit than was expected at this time of the year, and the information that we're obtaining from the staff is that it's mainly because during July and August the weather was so cold, and in fact a lot of people didn't even put out their wheelie bins as well. It was a reduced amount, and they were being blown over, etc., etc. So just generally speaking, it just resulted in a reduced income and revenue at KWS. So in terms of what KWS is doing to recover from that, we're hoping that that just means that more people will be coming in the warmer months now than we expected. We're obviously we're promoting a number of attractions and incentives at the tip shop and things like that. And there's a report that's coming out at the next meeting which will just expand on those aspects. So KWS is trying to attract more people to go there and purchase stuff at the tip shop and so on to generate more revenue. But there is limited capacity to actually generate more revenue. It's largely locked in by the fees and those tip shop sales.
Thank you, Mr. Frew. Answer your question. Thank you. Councillor Winter.
Thanks, Mayor. I was just going to ask in relation to 5.2, talks about the increase in fees. If the increase in fees are not made, then it's expected that there will be a reduction of about $50,000 in expected revenue for the year. Is that saying that the increase in fee was built into this year's KWS budget?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the chair, yes, that's correct. The council's financial department, when they determined the budget for KWS, they tell me that they included an increase in fee halfway through the year.
Thank you.
That's all. That was my only question. I mean, if that's what we budgeted for, Councillor Percy already made the point around the financial sustainability of KWS. I've carried on about KWS so many times, everyone's sick of it, so I'm not going to do it tonight. But I endorse the recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Bastard.
I noticed that the people that are in favour of this are the ones that get rubbish collected from their homes. You do, but are you getting to pay for it, getting a rise in your pay halfway through this year? No, you've got a set amount for the year, and I think this is... I think this is grossly unfair to expect us to pay yet again. The clean-up, we've had to pay extra for clean-up anyway this year because people are dumping their rubbish, and that was in one of the things. People just can't afford it. I mean, it's just like $11 plus your petrol to go down. It's fine if you say, I think as Councillor Fox did once before, it's only the cost of a cup of coffee. Well, you know, it's not the cost of a cup of coffee, I'm sorry. And I just think that this is, yet again, for people who don't get rubbish collection, it's unfair. We had two green waste days that we were going to be able to dump things. Cancelled because of rain.
Wind.
Tip closed because of wind. You know, we need to have some other way of people who don't get a general rubbish collection being able to take their rubbish at a reduced rate.
Thank you, Councillor Bastain. Councillor Grace.
Well done. I think it's time that the public are going to turn on us, and I'm hearing that now, that our rates are too expensive. There's a lot of wastage down there, I'm told. I must take my daily trips back there, I think, from what I've been told, what's going on down at the transfer station, etc., the amount of staff and the way that tip shop's run. Look, I can't stomach this. Look, if you go for a drive, and I did the other day, four different locations, rubbish tipped over the banks. Not just three or four bags, heaps of them. And it won't be long, and we'll have another 100,000, 200,000 to go out and clean up the municipality because we are outpricing our services. And a good example of that is the mistake we made, or this council made, when it set up Bruni Oil, and I'll say no more. I will not support an increase.
Thank you, Councillor Grace. Councillor Fox?
I'd like to put an amendment that item B be deleted from this motion. basically because I don't think...
That's all right. I'll see whether you've got a seconder first before we go on. Do I have a seconder in relation to an amendment that item B be deleted?
Not to increase the fees.
That item B be deleted. Okay, so Councillor Grace has supported. Councillor Fox, if you'd speak to the amendment, please.
It doesn't seem that long ago since we've gone up to the round number of $10, and the number of people I've spoken to since this agenda came out all said, I don't want to... I'm happy to put out a $10 note, but then to go getting another dollar on top of that is just awkward. And I also note that we are getting another report on the waste situation, and if we don't increase the fees, it would be reconsidered as part of that the normal fees and charges review in 2017. And the Kingborough Waste Management Strategy that is currently being looked at, and we've just had a workshop on that, and there are a lot of issues that we're going to consider, things like green waste and maybe more separation of waste. And I just feel that this is not the appropriate time just before Christmas to be putting it up by a dollar. I'd rather see it stay at $10, and I think also we have a lot of visitor people coming through at this time of year at Christmas. We've got a lot of people going to Bruny Island, a lot of extra rubbish, and anything we can do to encourage people to bring that to the tip or to take it home, I think is a good move. I have my concerns about increasing the levy when I can see that there may be other ways that we can support this situation in the future.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Chatterton?
I'm flabbergasted. We've all sat round and did a budget, and we all voted for the budget. And the increase, as we've been told by the Deputy General Manager, was in the budget. If you support what Councillor Fox is saying, you are now not supporting the budget which you have all supported and approved prior to June. It was...
Quiet, please.
The Deputy General Manager has said in that budget it was budgeted for this $1 increase to be there. That's what I heard him say. Did I not? And therefore, we approved it within the budget. And therefore, we as a council are going back on the budget we approved. We need to stick to our guns.
Thank you, Councillor Chatterton. Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Chatterton's picked up on a similar point to me, although in a different way. But yes, I've also heard that the mid-year review was, you know, the report said that the mid-year review was expected. I hear the points that Councillor Fox is raising, but I think that... this is expected to have this review, that we're budgeting to have that income. It's a big hit to the income if we don't add this $1 per visit, because it multiplies out by all those visits. What do we do? Someone else said, you know, do we wait till it's 15 so it's a round number? You have to set the figure somehow. I also thought the same thing. I thought I'm going to turn up there and go, oh, 10 bucks, and then I'm going to have to find another dollar. But we can't round everything off to the nearest 5 or the nearest 10 all the time. So I can't support this amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillor Winter?
I think we need to remember that KWS is in a perilous financial state, and whilst that's another matter, we need to be very conscious of the fact that it's sitting with, I don't have the balance sheet in front of me, but negative assets on the balance sheet. It's forecast to only just reach break even this year, and we're hearing that the performance this year is indicating that we're looking at a deficit again, which is going to further erode the balance sheet. So I think if we need to be responsible councillors, and I think the way to be a responsible councillor here too is accept that in the short term at least, whilst we complete our review of waste management in Kingborough, which is going to substantially deal with some of these issues, in the short term it is required that we need an increase in revenue. I don't know if Councillor Fox can add... I think Councillor Fox mentioned something at the end of a contribution about other ways to increase revenue. I'm not sure if it's probably not an opportunity for you to expand on it, but I'm not aware of what they are at this point in time. Again, as I understand it, I don't have the figures in front of me, but the tip shop hasn't been operating as profitably as forecast as well. So I haven't been a fan of the existing arrangements, but I am a realist in that the most important thing for us is that KWS operates financially sustainably, and I can't see any way other way in the short term to resolve this other than to increase the fee. Unfortunately, the practicalities of going from $10 to $11, whilst I can understand it as a user, they don't outweigh the fact that we need to be running our waste management sustainably. So I think the only responsible decision tonight is to agree with the proposed motion.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Councillor Bastard?
I think I want to ask a question. Certainly. Since I've already spoken on this.
No, you haven't spoken. We're talking the amendment.
Okay, that's all right. Is there any suggestion that the general waste rubbish collection for people who get the collection will go up by 10% midway through their year, as this is what you're doing to the other people?
I don't believe there is, and I'll ask Mr. Ferrier just to confirm that.
Through the chair, no, the rates are set for the year.
And that is because there is a contract in place.
Yeah, so it's the same people that you're making pay each time.
Your people, down south.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. I don't think there's anyone else wanting to speak, so I'll ask Councillor Fox to close debate on the amendment.
I guess most people, as Councillor Bastone says, most people who use this facility at the tip are people from the country, and they have no choice. They don't have curbside collection, and the number of people who come from the areas that are already receiving curbside collection would be far less who are using this facility. And I agree that there is a lot of more rubbish being dumped along sides of roads, along the Channel Highway, the southern outlet, and I'm concerned that if we keep going up at short intervals, I'm not against going up. I wasn't against going up to the $10 amount. And we may well go up to $15 later. But I just feel that while we're in the middle of doing a report on this issue, while there may be other things that are happening that we can economise on or maybe charge for, that this is not the time to be putting up the fees at Beretta Waste Station. And I have written an email to the General Manager today that I don't want to elaborate on, but I have concerns about the cross-subsidisation of waste that is occurring in this municipality. But I'll leave it at that, and I still support quite strongly that we support the amendment.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillors, I'll put the amendment moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Grace, and that is to simply delete all associated with paragraph B, the second. Councillors in favour of that amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against the amendment.
Aye.
We'll have a division or a show of hands. Those in favour of the amendment, please, if you would raise your hands. I have Councillors Grace, Councillor Bastone and Councillor Fox, and opposing the amendment are Councillors Winter, Percy, Chatterton, Berry, Atkinson, Reid and Wass. Amendment is lost. We are now back to the original recommendation, and the next speaker I have here is Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. I only had a couple of extra points to raise, and first is I was a bit concerned about Councillor Bastone saying the people voting in favour of the motion are those who have curbside collection. I think, hope that all of us here don't vote on self-interest, but we vote on what we think's right for the community, and so the risk of a council anecdote, I don't have curbside collection, and yet I think this is the right thing to do to increase this. I'm also interested, perhaps from the general manager, and he can tell me who should answer it. Do we have any evidence that there's increase in roadside dumping as we increase the fees?
Mr. Arnold?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Atkinson, only anecdotal at this stage. I'd obviously have to take that question on notice to give a more detailed response.
And just I believe we get a report on the cost of collection of picking up of rubbish out of the bush and things, don't we? That gets itemised. So that'd be something you could let me know too, whether that's gone up, whether there seems to be any correlation or causality between increasing the fees at Beretta and the cost of that collection. Thanks. That's all I have.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. I'll ask Councillor Chatterton, you may speak to the motion.
Yeah, I haven't spoken on this one. Just a question. Can anybody inform me how much the curbside collection fee went up for those ratepayers that have curbside collection this year?
Mr. Ferrier, no idea? Not off the top of anyone's head. I'm sorry, Councillor Chatterton.
So therefore, Mayor, I gather that the residents that have curbside collection have actually had an increase already this financial year.
That could be so, Councillor Chad. I will now ask Councillor Percy if he'd like to close debate.
Thank you. I suppose if there is more dumping in the bushes because of this, I suppose, coming from a previous council, I know we used to go around and actually pull open all the rubbish and it was quite easy to find out who was dumping it half the time because they were a bit dumb in that and they sort of left receipts in there and everything else. So I'm sure if it's happening, I think we could probably catch up with it if we need to. That is the council's role, isn't it, to investigate dumping, I suppose.
Council has done that in the past, yes.
Yep. So that's probably it. I believe we had an increase 12 months ago at the fees down there. I think somewhere said it was recent, but I'm pretty sure it was 12 months ago. But as the main point of this is we don't want a $50,000 black hole in our budget. We just can't afford to have it. We need to get fair dinkum about our long-term financial plan. As I've said in the past, we seem to get a few surprises along the way and that we don't achieve what we set out to achieve through the budget. So now we know we're going to get a $50,000 black hole in this budget. If we don't pass this, then we'd be irresponsible not to put it through. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Percy, seconded by Councillor Winter, and I will read it for the record. That Council A notes the mid-year review of fees for Beretta and Bruny Island Waste Transfer Stations. B determines that fees for disposal of waste at the Beretta Waste Transfer Station to be as follows. The general waste minimum fee waste to the walking floor from $10 to $11 as at 1 December 2016. General waste per tonne from $100 to $110, applying to waste amounts in excess of 100 kilograms. And the green waste per cubic metre from $10 to $11, also effective from the 1st December 2016. And C, determines that fees for the disposal of steel at Bruny Island Waste Transfer Station be as follows. Steel, the fee, $5 per cubic metre. Car bodies and half car bodies not accepted. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation. Those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
We'll have a division or a show of hands, please. Those in favour of the recommendation are Councillors Winter, Percy, Chatterton, Fox, Berry, Atkinson, Reet and Wass, and opposing the motion, Councillor Bastone and Councillor Grace. Motion is carried. The next item is on page 124, New Building Act 2016. For the record, at 7:08, Councillor Atkinson has left the meeting. And I'm looking for the... Page 131, I have a mover in Councillor Chadden and a seconder. Councillor Grace. Councillor Chadden.
Look, Mayor, we had a workshop on this. Mr. Ferrier brought in the various departmental people and the building surveyor, etc., to talk to us about this change in the regulations and what fees we would no longer charge because of the work that is being done by outside building surveyors, etc. This now lists out the report and the fees that were highlighted to us at that workshop, and I just recommend the recommendation, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillor Fox?
Well, I'll be voting against this motion. We are the fastest growing area in Tasmania, if not Australia, and I think we should be putting on more staff rather than less. If we have this situation, there'll be nobody in the community. The community will not know who to contact when they've got a complaint, like we had last week, where there was a building that was exceeding the height already in the foundations and on the floor, and it was obviously incorrect. Now, that community member would not be able to come to council to try and rectify the situation. So I just don't think it's in the community's interest not to have a one-stop shop, a central point that the whole community can relate to and communicate with in terms of building surveying. And I think also that there is a reliable local source of knowledge if we keep it in council. It's both people that know, and they know that the people that they're dealing with, the tradesmen they're dealing with, also the geography of the area and the building conditions, which is very difficult for an outsider to keep abreast with. And I think it's important for our council to have a presence in the area in terms of building, to have somebody there that people can get advice from, be guided by, as they have been in the past. And I appreciate that there are cost implications with that decision, but I think it's worth it. I think that's a sort of service that this council should be providing as the fastest growing area. And I realise that in a lot of cases it's only isolated councils that still do this, but I think because we are so fast growing and we have an isolated area on Bruny Island and the South Channel, that it's imperative that we don't divest our responsibilities to the public sector. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Percy?
Yeah, no, I'm in favour of this. I'm just wondering if we could find out how much is actually the difference in what's going to be received from each of these different classes, because I'm not quite sure which ones are material and which ones aren't. So I don't know whether somebody could report that back to us at some stage. Obviously, if we're getting rid of some and increasing others, I'd like to know what the overall effect is.
Well, yes, that's what I was...
Is that possible? And it says that we're going to be a mainly compliance and plumbing administration. Is there a way to charge for this? I mean, user pays is a very common way of getting revenue these days, and I'm just wondering, is there, perhaps the general manager can tell me whether there is a way of charging for this compliance.
They didn't say that.
Mr. Ferrier? Can I have some lights off, please?
Through the chair, I indicate in the report that it's very difficult to generate fees from compliance. We can fine people, we can take people to court and recover our costs, but obviously we can't walk onto a building site and say to somebody, well, we're not going to enforce it unless you pay us some money. You know, we have to do the enforcement. There's no way of recovering funds other than actually fining or getting court costs. And I guess I indicate in the report that inevitably you never fully recover your costs in that manner. So it is a time-consuming and costly exercise. With the imposition of a few additional fees, there will be some additional revenue generated. I haven't been able to quantify that. That's something that we'll monitor over time. The fact that we're now charging for separate plumbing permit fees, which is what other councils do, we've in the past been doing our building and plumbing permits together. What we'll be doing is doing them separately in accordance with the new legislation. And that will generate some additional revenue, so that will counterbalance the fact if we cease to do the building surveying work. So it is certainly going to cost us more money because we are not going to be doing that building surveying work, but it might not be as bad as the estimated cost of about $70,000 that I've indicated in the report.
Thank you, Mr. Ferrier.
Can I also comment on Councillor Fox's comments? Within the space of 5 minutes here, we could have increased our cost to this business of $200,000, $50,000 to KWS, and probably $140,000 to employ a couple of extra employees. I just I just find it a bit frustrating that we've got a long-term financial plan. We keep on coming up with ways to increase our expenditure and not our revenue. So I'd just like to make that comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Percy. Councillor Winter. Your light was on before. Don't want to speak?
I don't know if that's right.
It is right, but do you want to speak?
Oh,
you don't. Okay. Next, I've got Councillor Berry.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I just had, before I speak, I just had a few questions. Which I can't find in the report. Private building surveyors, are their fees in any way regulated? If you're a private building surveyor, can you charge anything? That's the first question.
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the Chair, I'm not aware of any regulated fees. I'm sure there is something within their own institution that they set in terms of standards and what fees should be charged, but I'm not a building surveyor. I don't know the details of that, but I'd imagine it's within their own professional body. They have a set of fees that they try to keep to. That said, my understanding is that building surveyors are not obliged to comply with that, and they'll charge fees. And it's generally a cost recovery exercise, so as I've indicated in the report, if there's jobs to be done further away and further travel time incurred, then they'll charge that to the client.
Surgeons have a recommendation for their fee schedule, and they certainly don't keep to it. As you correctly pointed out in the report, compliance will increase. If council were to retain our own building inspector, would that have an impact on the amount of compliance that would be necessary, or would it have no impact at all?
I know, through the Chair, it's fully intended that we retain our own building surveyor. Greg Wilson is our building coordinator, who is a qualified building surveyor. Most other councils that are not providing a building surveying service, such as Glenorchy and Hobart and Clarence and so on, also employ fully qualified building surveyors to do the compliance and enforcement work. We would intend to do the same. So we would retain our existing staff. There's no changes in our existing staff. What the report's indicating is that the emphasis of our work will shift from the relatively small building surveying component into much more compliance and enforcement. And as I say in the report, it's understandable that's going to happen with more responsibility being placed back on plumbers and builders to comply with legislation, and hence there's likely to be more complaints and so on.
It's kind of self-regulation, I think you mentioned that.
That's right. Self-regulation is probably likely to incur more sort of issues that we might need to follow up on. I think that's unfortunate in relation to the legislation. It's probably going to benefit the building industry, but it's, I guess, potentially at some cost to council in terms of administering that legislation.
My third question is... I have to be a little bit careful here, but we had a development of units in Kingston in which a private building inspector inspected and passed the property, and it proved to be incorrect. Could the same situation arise with the new recommendations?
Mr. Ferrier?
Through the Chair, yes. The new legislation isn't that much different to what is currently in place, so there's still that potential for, I guess, private building surveyors to get it wrong, as they may have done in the past. I guess the main difference here is that the opportunities for self-regulation have been increased, hence... the obligations on council to keep an eye on things and ensure compliance are probably going to increase as well.
So the answer is yes there, that it could, yeah. Just briefly, I certainly attended the workshop and heard all the arguments, and it's certainly indicated some reservations, but we now actually have to vote on it, so it's a slightly different situation. I'm really concerned about... Section B is that we actually dispose of our external building. Sorry, we dispose of our internal building surveying service. I mean, one can't but be conditioned by one's own experiences, and in another place that I worked, it's fairly substantial. We it was decided in their wisdom that the hospital should cease having plumbers, for example, very soon. Found out that it was much more expensive. I realised that the building surveyors, private ones, would not be working for council, save for the ones that we're going to have to employ to do the compliance. But I have reservations, I've read the report, serious reservations about ceasing our building surveying service. I'll just be interested to hear a bit more debate.
Mr. Ferry, do you want to add anything? I know it's covered in your report, but do you want to add anything to
through
that?
Through the Chair, no, I think it's covered in the report. I mean, the point that I try to make in the report is that if we continue to provide an external building surveying service, we need to employ an additional building surveyor, and that's a reasonably well-paid professional officer if we are going to meet the obligations under the new legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Ferry. Councillor Grace?
No, I find it difficult because, I'll go and get a private building surveyor. Bowl in here with a set of plans. He's a qualified person to present the plans on my behalf for the ratepayers. Then you're going to get the council internal building surveyor that's going to assess it anyway. What's the purpose? Because if you're going to get a private building certification, why do you need to come to council? Only to pay your fees. And the same with the plumbing. Why do you need a plumbing department? If you're not going to have a building surveyor, why do you need plumbing inspectors? Why the same thing? Why don't we have private plumbings? Or how many of these building surveyors are qualified enough to do plumbing as well? So it's a bit of a two-ended straw to me, because I was sort of surprised when I seen this that council ceased to provide an external building. Mr. Wilson pointed out one thing to this council at the workshop that stuck in my mind. It was only the one part of his role where he made money on. And I thought we were going to get a better report coming back to council on why we should cease. So I won't support this, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I think Mr. Ferrier actually covered that, Councillor Gross, and I'll ask him whether he wants to cover any more.
Sorry, through the Chair. The thing I just make is that, I make the point in paragraph 4.6, I think it is, in relation to the Plumbing Permit Authority, that what the legislation does, it does somewhat separate and give a greater status to the plumbing surveyors. They actually are called plumbing surveyors now, like building surveyors. And where you've got private building surveyors approving works, we don't go in there and change or check their work. Their work is sacrosanct, you might say. It's only if something is proven to be wrong later on that we get involved. But the Plumbing Permit Authority is actually within council. They're not private plumbing permit. They're not private plumbing surveyors. They are within council. So we've actually got the role of a building surveyor in the plumbing area within council. So building surveyors are in the private enterprise. Plumbing surveyors are within council. So there's quite a large role to play in the new legislation in terms of overseeing plumbing work, which doesn't currently exist.
Thank you, Mr. Berry. Councillor Reid, I had you down next. You. Oh, I had yours on ages ago when you was I've got Councillor Atkinson after you, actually.
Thank you. Look, I was just going to make the comment in relation. I'm interested in the discussion about whether we continue doing the building surveying work or not. But I just wanted to emphasise that I think one of the important points in here in relation to the fees, apart from the fact that, as others have noted, look, we have a
we have a financial plan that we need to stick to, and I think Councillor Percy summed it up well when he talked about how much money we could have, how much revenue we could have foregone or spent today just within two items, and I think it's incumbent upon us to remember that. We don't like putting up fees, but the bottom line is that these fees here need to be introduced as a result of the new legislation. So it's a classic example of the state government making legislative changes where it's likely that the community will think that it's the action of council, but we have to impose these new fees because of the legislative changes, and I think that when we do announce them, we make that very clear to the community, because it's yet another one of a long line of areas where the buck is passed to local government, unfortunately.
Thank you. Now Councillor Atkinson.
Thank you, Mayor. Yeah, so needed a bit more clarification, and I can see that in the report that we budgeted a revenue of $87,000 and that we're estimating it'll probably come in at $70,000. And I can see reference that we won't have the capacity to do the work, so we'd have to employ someone extra, but I sort of can't see a figure for what that would cost and what the overall financial implication of this decision is. Is there any more information on that?
Mr. Ferrier, could you give us those figures again, please?
I can't turn my light off.
Through the Chair, I haven't provided an estimate of what an additional staff member would cost. I'm not sure whether that would be a full-time position or a 3 or 4 day a week position. We haven't gone into that sort of detail. It's just indicating that we can implement the proposed legislation with our existing staff. We can't continue to do the building surveying work. As I've indicated in the report, it's starting to diminish as time goes on, because we're finding that permit authority work is dominating. I would say that if, for example, we wanted to continue to provide a building surveying service, we would have to be turning away work, because it is somewhat discretionary. We do tend to turn away work as well. So it's not as if anybody who wants us to do their job for them, we do it automatically. We do it if we have the resources available. So it then becomes a question as to, well, how much work are we trying to attract? Are we trying to do it as a revenue earning thing? I would suggest that an additional staff member would cost in the order of, say, $100,000, maybe with more on costs. You're talking up around with vehicle and everything else, you're getting up to around $150,000 mark. So it's that sort of, maybe we wouldn't need a full-time equivalent, so it might be a proportion of that. So to pick a figure out of the air, $100,000 is sort of the additional amount if we were going to continue on a viable building surveying service.
Okay, thank you. Because, I mean, to me that's pretty critical information as to how to decide on this, because I'm seeing a big chunk of revenue that we had in the budget that we were expecting to receive. Presumably we knew this new act was coming. I don't know how much of the detail was available. So we've approved the budget, we're expecting this revenue, and now we're saying, well, we're going to have to make a decision here, because if we continue to receive the revenue, we're going to have this bigger expense. I'm finding the information I've had a chance to read before the meeting isn't really enough to make the decision. If it really is, and I know you've been put on the spot, Sir Deputy General Manager, to say what the cost of a staff member will be, but it's sort of becoming, you know, very touch and go, isn't it? You're saying, well, 100, 150,000 full time, about 100 or something, and the revenue is about 70. But it's discretionary, so as to whether we take the jobs. So if there is some spare capacity, we can take some jobs and get some of that revenue. I'm sort of not clearly hearing the case here. I mean, if we continue to provide this service and we only take, you know, a small number of these decreasing jobs, I don't understand how that is worse for us. At least that's the potential for some revenue. But maybe I'm misunderstanding things here. Am I making any sense? Is there any clarification to that?
Mr. Ferry?
Through the Chair, it was probably my explanation which was partly the problem, I guess. The If we put somebody else on to do the building surveying work, or at least to assist Greg in doing the building surveying work, then I would say that we would continue to generate the same amount of revenue that we're currently getting, and it would largely pay its way. So it would probably then mean that it's something that. It's no question at the end of the day the imposition of this new legislation is going to cost council. I mean, it's not something we can recover the cost through a building surveying function. The only way the imposition of this legislation, I've estimated, would cost us in the vicinity of $70,000 or $80,000. We can put on another building surveyor to do the building surveying work, and that position could effectively pay for itself. But at the end of the day, it's still going to cost us that amount of money. It's not money that we can save, if that makes it clearer.
Yep.
Providing that building surveying function might not be as easy as it sounds either, because we have to find somebody. It's not as if there's a lot of building surveyors out there to find. And it's a trend, as I indicated in the report, that most councils are going away from. It's an area of work which, unless you're in a particularly isolated location, most of the city-based councils have gone purely into a permit authority role and no longer provide building surveying services. So it is a trend that I guess is we've tended to follow. I mean, even the fact that our current budget estimates are 87,000, but we're only likely to get 70,000, that's just a reflection of the fact that we're starting to turn work away.
Okay, so you're saying that it would break even, and that the reduction in revenue is because of we don't have the capacity, that there is some work there. But if we didn't make this decision to get rid of this function now, if we delayed the decision for 6 months, you know, until the next budget, would that be awkward as far as employing staff and so on? What would happen then?
Mr. Ferrier?
I'm not going to turn my light off, so someone else can choose.
Through the chair, if we continued to do building surveying, unfortunately what would probably happen is the new Act would come into force at the beginning of next year, and we would not have the resources to actually do that work, and we continue to turn it away, and we wouldn't generate the revenue that we're expecting to generate. We'd generate some, we'd continue to do some work, but for the next 7 or 8 months, we would generate some of the revenue, but not all of the revenue, because of the demands of the new legislation.
Right. Okay, so what I'm hearing is there's a potential for a small amount of additional revenue if we continue for the rest of the financial year providing this service. And I'm not hearing that it costs us anything. Whichever way, it's going to cost us money. And by maintaining a building surveying service, although we'll have to turn away a lot of the work, we can still make some revenue, is what I'm hearing. So I find this hard to support as it is. The only last question I had is, in those amended fees, many of them are to do with removing the building surveying service. There are some that aren't there, is that right?
Through the chair, the only changes to the fees are the removal of the ones to do with building surveying and the inclusion of new fees because of the new legislation. There's no changes otherwise to existing fees which are unaffected by the new legislation.
Okay, so if we had an amended motion that didn't include the removal of the external building surveyor, we'd still have to have an amendment to the fees, but only those fees that relate to the new legislation. Well, I'll propose an amendment that, and I'd like to test as to that, we take out Part B and we modify Part A to say the fees as contained with the report that relate to the that relate to the new legislation, but not those relating to removing the building surveying service.
Is that what you've said?
That's pretty close. It's right to the new legislation. Yeah.
Do I have a second for the amendment?
And removing Part B.
Councillor Fox.
Mayor, before you go, can I ask a question on something, Mr. Ferrier?
Let's go to the amendment first. I've got two other councillors waiting. So, Councillor Atkinson, if you'd like to speak to the amendment, briefly.
Look, very briefly, I'll say it all. All I can see is the potential for a slight revenue. I can see the arguments, the social arguments people have made about the service being available in remote areas where a commercial provider might charge high costs. And there's nothing preventing us from removing this service, say, at the beginning of the next financial year, but it gives us some time to see the implications of the new Act. So I think this is a better way to proceed.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Speakers for or against this amendment? Councillor Winter?
Can I broadly ask the Deputy General Manager what the operational implications on Council would be if we were to move, if we were to support this motion tonight?
So the financial impact?
Operational impacts.
Yep.
Operationally, I think what would happen is that with the new introduction of the new legislation, with our existing resources, we will be focused on making the necessary changes to that, making some adjustments, and potentially, there is that additional compliance enforcement role, which might not hit straight away, which might build over time. It might take even 6 months or 12 months. And I think that would probably impact on the fact that we would be probably turning away, as I said before, a bit of the building surveying work and saying to people, look, we haven't got the time or the resources, you need to go and get a private building surveyor to do it for you. I think what we'd try and do, if that was the case, would be tended to take on the simpler jobs and the more remote jobs as a sort of a more of a community-based thing, because at the end of the day, it's going to cost us the same either way. But that's something we'll figure out. But I think what will happen is that we'll continue to do some building surveying work, but to a fairly diminished extent because of the impact of the legislation.
Thank you. Thank you. Councillor Grace?
Yeah, well, with that then, with the building surveyor, Mr. Ferrier says that he can't do it, but he's got an assistant, as I understand. Is that correct, that the building surveyor has an assistant?
Mr. Ferrier, through the chair, Greg Wilson is the building surveyor within council. He has a trainee. He's not somebody who can do the jobs on his own. He goes out with Greg, and he has an administrative assistant, a clerical officer.
Thank you.
Just a question then, how far is he through his course, the assistant? I mean, he's been here a fair while to my knowledge.
He's about halfway.
Halfway, yeah. Councillor Chadden.
Councillor Winter touched on a very important word, which was operational. And the General Manager has endorsed the report by the Deputy General Manager. We are getting into dangerous territory here looking at operational. We as a council are not operational. We are strategic. And I believe we need to take advice from our General Manager and our Deputy General Manager on the way to run their council. They employ the staff. We don't employ the staff. We only employ the General Manager.
Councillor Grace, please.
And I believe that those recommendations are coming from qualified officers saying how they want to run the council. I believe we're getting into very dangerous territory.
Councillor Grace,
I have, please, the floor. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Yes. Councillor Grace,
shut up.
Please be quiet. Councillor Chadden, please.
You're sure you're running the meeting.
Now, let's get down to a couple of important points. The comment was made by a councillor about the private surveyors. In most cases, if a person goes to an architect, a draftsman, or to a, let's call it a shed provider, you are normally pushed towards a private building surveyor. You are not pushed to council. There is very few people that come to council. most of those qualified people who are doing the designs are pushing people to private. You've also got to remember that we have a lot of community groups in the municipality who put buildings on council land, e.g. men's sheds. We've got bowls clubs, we've got tennis clubs. All those organisations have buildings on council land. They cannot use the council's building surveyor. It is illegal. We cannot survey our own work. They have to go out to private contractors. There's a gentleman up in King, up towards where Councillor Reet lives, who is a building surveyor. He's had to recently survey plans for the Kingston men's shed. There's another building surveyor in North Hobart who had to come down and inspect those buildings as they are being erected. Council has no input because it's on council land. So to say that we're doing a community service and providing something for the community as a building inspector or surveyor, we're only doing it to the individual people. The people who need our support can't get it because we can't survey our own stuff. So they are being disadvantaged. If you have a building surveyor and you have a community group, well, I presume the museum would be another one. It's not on their own land. It's on government land, council land. They will have to use private surveyors. So those people, if we went the way we're talking about going, are still going to be disadvantaged. They still can't bring their plans to council and have them surveyed. I believe we've gone through a workshop. We've had certified advice from our manager and our deputy general manager to way in which we run this thing, and I think we should accept that and get on with it.
Councillor Bastone, do you want to speak to the amendment?
Well, in so much as what Councillor Chatterton was saying, I want to speak as the reason why we need the council to continue to have their surveyors. And he seemed to be speaking against why that was the only thing. So I'm not sure whether I come in now.
Well, you're speaking for the amendment if you wish to, so go ahead.
Yes, I want the amendment to go ahead for two reasons. One, obviously, because of the remoteness of a lot of the area in Kingborough, particularly Bruny Island. And secondly, on personal experience, we had a private building surveyor who died, and it left us in a very difficult position as far as getting all our plans and everything through, because he hadn't kept good records because he was obviously ill towards the end. So the private building surveyor is not always a good option. The council is a much safer option.
Thank you. Do you wish to speak to the amendment, Councillor?
Yes.
Yes. Your turn.
Look,
sorry, you've spoken to the amendment.
I just asked that single question. And then
one question.
Yeah, thanks. I must admit, when I go through agendas and I often see ones I think, that'll be a quick one, and this is one of the ones where I thought this would be over pretty quickly. It hasn't. I've been listening intently, and I can't, maybe haven't been listening hard enough, I can't understand the special importance of council providing this service. This is a service which, in the report...
So the question, please?
Sorry?
The question?
Oh, no, I said I asked a question before, but I didn't make a contribution, if that's okay.
All right, if you asked the question before...
Yeah, I just asked
sorry,
that question.
Sorry, I wasn't
aware. Yeah, that's fine. So I can't quite understand the importance of this. We've seen... there's a particular point here that says that 10 years ago, 100% of these were done by council, and over the past 10 years, it's dwindled to 10%. So you're seeing a decrease in demand, which isn't driven only by council sort of picking and choosing what it does, but also by the fact that, obviously, people are choosing the private sector... it would not surprise me if that was based around price or service, and I think that's probably a fairly good indicator where we can see this market going. And if it's decreased from 100% to 10% in 10 years, I'm not sure that we can foresee this continuing, and we're not seeing much evidence of the community providing us seeing a lot of value in it. The other point I'd make is around that strategic focus. I mean, I can't understand any strategic reason why council would be providing this particular service. When it comes to compliance, you know, obviously we're going to continue to provide a compliance role, but this is different to that. And again, I just fail to see this almost emotional connection people are displaying to providing the services. It's provided by the private sector very well. We're seeing a move across councils in Tasmania back away from this. People are choosing the private sector over council. We've got qualified advice from our general, as Councillor Chatterton said, from our general manager and deputy general manager, very strongly here. I think the deputy general manager has answered all the questions very well. I think financially, Councillor Percy made a very strong argument earlier that really this is at best break even, and at worst risky to continue to try and fulfil this function in the medium to long term. So. I won't be supporting the amendment, and I'll speak to the motion if this fails.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. Is there anyone else that wishes to speak to the amendment that hasn't already done so? Councillor Atkinson, would you close debate, please, on the amendment?
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry, Councillor Fox, did you have your... No, you haven't on the amendment.
I guess in the workshop I recall that it seemed to be an even balance. It wasn't a strong recommendation either way from staff. But I do remember that when there was private certification in the industry, a lot of the building surveyors from this council went into the private industry. And there was a time when there was quite a concern that by being in the private industry, basically, there was a lot more pressure on them to approve things and to agree to things because they were desperate to get work and they wanted to keep their clients, and clients would choose people who regularly worked for them and were good at getting things through council. And I think if we had a person who is employed by council, they can be more impartial, they get an income anyway, they are not desperate to get that work, and that you get a consistency and a quality of approval that we can be proud of. So that, to me, is the bottom line, why I think we should support this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Atkinson, would you close debate, please?
Thank you, Mayor. I'll address some of the points that have been raised in the debate. As to whether this is an operational decision, I don't believe it is. Part of our role is to decide what services we provide as a council. And we are not directing staff. We're not saying you must employ their staff or whatever.
Please.
We're saying this is a service that we think we should continue to provide. So I don't believe it's an operational decision. As far as jobs on council land, that's the situation. Whichever way we go here, those jobs won't be being done by council building surveyors, so it's not an issue. Well, I don't see it as an issue. This isn't an irreversible decision. This is saying don't make a decision tonight. Bring in the new legislation, see what effect it has on our staff. I mean, a lot of what I'm hearing is we think, we imagine, we're not sure. There's no obligation to take the work. We've said, so if there's capacity to take it, we'll take it. I'm not directing staff. I'm not saying we should put on more staff to do this. I'm saying if we find we still have capacity to do this role, continue to do this role. If we don't have capacity, we turn the jobs away. So that's, I see no extra problem there. The point of it is, well, two. One is there's potential revenue there, and this is revenue that we budgeted for. Okay, we're not going to get all of the revenue we hope, but there's a potential for additional revenue by keeping on this role. We don't have to, you know, as I said, budget time. We can go, look, you know, now we have more information. We've seen what the implications of the new legislation. Look, the staff are flat out. They're not taking any work anyway. That's the time to make the decision. And I guess my final thing is, although the work's decreasing, there's still a demand from the community to this. There are still people coming to the council who want the building surveying work done by the council. So that's something that our community wants. They're not all rushing off. Now, okay, it's diminishing, and maybe in 6 months' time we'll go, look, it's gone down to a tiny, tiny number. It's not worth doing. But there's still a demand there, and I haven't heard any argument as why we shouldn't keep servicing whatever we can of that demand with the capacity we've got, which will bring in some income.
Thank you, Councillor Atkinson. Councillors, I'll put the amendment. The amendment moved by Councillor Atkinson, seconded by Councillor Fox, simply reads that the report of the New Building Act 2016 be noted, and that the amended building and plumbing fee schedule as contained within this report that relate to the new legislation
but not to delete those relating to the new building service be adopted. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
We'll have a division or a show of hands. Those in support of the amendment are Councillor Grace, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Fox, Councillor Berry and Councillor Atkinson. Those opposing the amendment are Councillor Winter, Councillor Percy, Councillor Chatterton, Councillor Reid, Councillor Wass. The amendment is lost. We are now back to the original motion, and I have speakers that have indicated they wish to speak, which will be the closing to Councillor Winter and Councillor Bastone in that order. Councillor Winter.
I think it's important. Look, this isn't an issue that's going to. We're probably not going to talk about this in 6 months' time as a great debate, but it's an important issue that it's an important issue in that we need to provide some direction as to what we're going to do with the Building Act when it comes into place and how we're going to respond to that. So I think that it's important that we have a decision tonight, and by endorsing the original motion before us as printed, I think we are endorsing the professional opinions, particularly of our Deputy General Manager, endorsed by our General Manager, which responds responsibly to not only the new regulations but also to what we've seen in terms of demand from our community. Whilst there may be some dwindling demand for this service, I think any time that we see, we can't provide a service to. Every time there's any form of demand, we can't always service that. That's the nature of local government. We've got finite resources. As I said, we're seeing dwindling demand, which is trending downwards. Now seems like the optimum time to dispense with this particular service, respond to the new regulations as put in front of us by the state government, and focus on those areas of compliance, which we've seen only last week that are very important.
Thank you. Councillor Bastone.
Once again, I can't agree with this and I won't be voting for it. This is, again, taking no notice of people who are living remotely. It's grossly unfair that people who live in Kingborough are not all treated in a similar fashion. And by having a council surveyor do the work, then we are. But the minute we get the private people in, we're going to be charged a lot more for a building surveyor to come to Bruny Island, to come across down to Gordon. It's just not right. Sorry.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. Councillor Chadden, would you like to close debate?
Well, just pick up on the last comment by Councillor Bastone, because it's not correct. They are already doing work on Bruny Island, the private surveyors. They're already doing work down the channel. So we're not taking... they're there. They're doing the work. We are doing limited work down there. It's interesting that the private surveyor, one of the private surveyors, only said to me a couple of Fridays ago that he reduces his fees for community groups. Now, we've got a set fee. So anybody that comes here to do any work, we have to charge the set fee. But we can't do community groups if they're on council land anyway. But we can do it for community groups that aren't on council land, but we have a set fee. But the private surveyor tells me that he reduces his costs for community groups. So there are some positives with that. And I think it might have been Councillor Fox or someone mentioned about trying to get private surveyors, surveyors for councils. And as Mr Ferrier mentioned, and it also might have been Councillor Percy, a lot of the bigger councils, Hobart, Glenorchy, Clarence, don't have building surveyors. The people out there in the private area make more money, but they don't necessarily charge more for fees because the way they structured their business becomes economical. That's why, in most cases, the architects and surveyors send people directly to these surveyors to do the work. I believe this is recommended by the General Manager and the Deputy General Manager. It's a way in which we should be running the council in the future. We've done a workshop. We've looked at it at a workshop. I believe we need to move forward and vote for the motion before us.
Thank you, Councillor Chadden. Councillors, I'll put the recommendation moved by Councillor Chadden, seconded by Councillor Grace. that the report of the New Building Act 2016 be noted, and that A, the amended building and plumbing fee schedule as contained with this report be adopted, and B, Council cease to provide an external building surveying service as at 16 December 2016. Councillors in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against?
No.
We'll have a division or a show of hands then, please. Those in favour of the motion are Councillors Winter, Percy, Chatterton, Reet and Wass. And opposing the motion are Councillors Grace, Bastone, Fox, Berry and Atkinson. Motion is lost. For the record, during that Councillor Atkinson returned to that meeting 7:10, which was some 45 minutes ago. Councillors, do you want a break? Well, we'll adjourn the meeting at 7:55 and we'll reconvene it at 8 p.m.